Thank you all for joining us here at I-80 Sports, where today we are predicting the top four seeds in every single division in the NHL, as well as other news and notes around the league. Thank you all for joining us here again at I-80 Sports. Make sure you check out our website down below, i80sports.com, for all of the rest of the content that we offer. The NFL draft is this week, and we have got a viewing party planned for you guys for the NFL, just like we did back in October for the NHL draft. So for those of you football junkies out there, make sure that you are present and join the conversation with us on Thursday. It's going to be a blasty blast. It's going to be awesome. And you can check that out at i80sports.com. You can also check it out here on YouTube as well on our YouTube page. And hey, while you're there, drop a comment down below. Smash that like button and make sure you subscribe if you have not done so already. And as always, make sure you follow us on Twitter at i80_sportsNHL to keep up with all of the news happening around the league, around the NHL. We try to be as active as possible, and the road to 1,000 is still on. I want to hit that sooner rather than later, and that only happens with you guys, the awesomest followers ever. And away we go. I'm Brian. He's Tom. Tom, how are you doing today?
Doing well, doing well. Another interesting week, yet quiet week in the NHL. But like I said, still some news to talk about, still some new uncoverings, I guess you could say. So why don't we just get right to it?
Sounds good. And hey, are you a fan of nostalgia? Because hey, it's time for another Chicago Blackhawks player to retire. Woo! No, but in all seriousness, let's actually be a little bit serious for a moment here. Longtime forward for the Chicago Blackhawks, Andrew Shaw, has decided to retire at the age of 29, citing multiple concussions over the course of his career. And this is certainly not something to, turn your head at. Concussions are a serious deal in any major sport, whether it's the NHL, whether it's the NFL, whether it's the MLB, wherever. Concussions are a serious thing, and I'm certainly happy that Andrew Shaw has decided to hang it up after one too many concussions. Tom, what are your thoughts on his retirement at the young age of 29?
You know what? I mean, I hate to say it, but it is the right thing to do with him. I mean, so many concussions, as we've seen with other players before, concussions can really ruin somebody. So, I think he's getting out now while it's safe to get out. His career is nothing to be upset about. He won two Stanley Cups with the Blackhawks. He was part of that elite club that the Blackhawks would love to do, where they would like to bring players from yesteryear back after getting rid of them. I still don't understand why they did that. As I've mentioned a few weeks ago, they still should be contenders with two other players that they got let go of. Irregardless, he had himself a good career. Wasn't a top player for the Hawks, but he's definitely a depth player and definitely a big part of two Stanley Cup winners. The guy won two Stanley Cups, and you can't complain about that. You can't complain about that. There's nothing wrong with that. And he's getting out now and deciding to be safe. And I commend him. I commend him for that. Cheers to a good career, two-time Stanley Cup champion. Still got his whole life ahead of him. Maybe he'll find a job in the game with the Hawks or with TV or with something. Who knows? Still a lot to do for him yet. So great career by Andrew Shaw.
Yeah, absolutely. In 544 games played, he had 116 goals, 131 assists, good for 247 points total. He was a plus 24 for his entire career. So not a bad career by any means. It's a shame that it was cut short, but you know what? At the end of the day, he won two Stanley Cups, and he got to ride off into the sunset on his own terms. He got to decide it his own way to get out when the getting out seemed good to him. So, Andrew Shaw, enjoy your early retirement, but we know this might not be the last time we see you around the NHL in general. Moving around the NHL as of right now. So I didn't mean to be Notre Dame-ish about a month and a half ago when we were talking about the TV deal, because I had kind of lightly mentioned that it's going to be a shame not to watch games on NBC Sports. And at that point, we were optimistic that NBC was going to continue their affiliation with the NHL in some capacity. And not so much. So the NBC is officially pulled out of NHL broadcasting in general. So that makes ESPN the de facto number one broadcaster for the fall of 2021 for the NHL. And just announced today, where you can watch NHL coverage on a secondary channel, will be Turner Broadcasting, specifically on TNT. So, Tom, what are your thoughts about this? What do you think about NHL games on TNT and NBC pulling out of this?
Well, I don't like that NBC pulled out of it. I really, really think that NBC gave the NHL the respect it deserved over the years. You know, it was its main sport. You know, it didn't really have much to compete with outside of football, you know, sometimes. And I guess EPL soccer, too. But, you know, with what would work with EPL soccer was it was always on in the mornings. The NHL was always on in the afternoons and the evenings. You know, all they really had to compete with on NBC was football. I liked them. They gave the league the respect it deserved. They really, really were able to, you know, get the league's brand up through the Winter Classic, through outdoor games, through just a lot, through good Stanley Cup final coverage, too. I feel like every final on NBC was done really well. It's a shame. It's a shame they're getting rid of it. I don't know what NBC's doing. You know, they did a story maybe 10 or so years ago about how back in the early 2000s, NBC and their sports coverage was amongst some of the worst in the U.S. on U.S. soil, and how like they were able to come back from it with the NFL, with the NHL, eventually getting MLS soccer, which they've since abandoned, and eventually getting EPL soccer, and just how great their sports coverage and their sports programming was. And I guess, you know, now they're going back to square one again because they seem to be getting rid of everything. As far as Turner's concerned, I really don't know. They've never done hockey. So I don't have anything to line it up against. With ESPN, at least I could line it up to their great coverage in the 90s and then their terrible coverage in the mid-2000s. But I don't have anything to really compare this against. I would have loved for Fox to have gotten it instead. Fox had three channels. They have Big Boy Fox. They have Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2. I feel like that would have given the league a huge area to play with there, a huge area to get a bunch of games on. I don't know if Fox was interested. I don't know if the league was interested in Fox. But I'll tell you the one thing that maybe nailed it down for Turner. Turner owns a Bleacher Report app. I don't know if you guys knew that at all, but they own the Bleacher Report app. And I think with ESPN having ESPN Plus and Turner having that Bleacher Report app, it's two big streaming apps to have the games on for people who are traveling or just, you know, just because streaming is probably the future of professional sports and televising things, you know? And right now, just with this Peacock app that NBC has, you know, it's still fairly new. It's still fairly unproven. And I feel like that's why they jumped over to Turner, just because their affiliation with the Bleacher Report. And maybe that's also why they didn't go to Fox, because Fox doesn't really have a streaming app right now. They haven't really tried to make one. I don't think they need to, as Fox has, besides the three sports channels and Big Boy Fox, they also could have elected to put games on FX if they really wanted to. They didn't do that. Obviously, they've never done it. They're not going to do it because they're not getting hockey. But I would have rather seen them there. I guess the positive out of all of it was at least CBS didn't get it because they're terrible with their CBS sports coverage and their Paramount Plus. They're damn near terrible. So I don't know. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it per se. I'm also not shooting it down per se. I'm curious. It's going to be interesting to see what Turner does with this. But my only qualm with that is that they have basketball to compete against now. And it's the same season as basketball. Basketball and hockey are in the same season. So that's a little bit of a head scratcher. But we shall see what happens.
We'll see what happens. And I'm certainly going to give it a chance. You had mentioned that the TNT does broadcast basketball, and that's true. And they have done a very good job with their basketball coverage in the past. Beyond just basketball, they've also been going back into the wrestling market most recently with All Elite Wrestling, AEW. So it's going to be a battle for all three for airtime in general, especially since AEW is trying to release more content, whether it be on TNT or elsewhere. But we're going to see how this works out. I am not jumping for joy for all this, but at the same time, I'm going to give it a chance. And who knows, maybe this brings the NHL back into the limelight where it rightfully deserves to be, especially with how amazing the play has been in the NHL as of late. Moving right along to players that haven't even made it to the NHL yet, the LIHF Under 18 Championship opens today. Tom, is there anybody that we need to be watching in this tournament that you feel like?
Three players come to mind. Two players for Canada in Shane Wright, who is projected to be one of that three-headed monster that I keep referring to week in and week out, is the captain and first-line center for Team Canada. Another guy out there is Connor Bedard, who really tore the WHL up this year as a 15-year-old. Obviously, he's not going to be able to go into the draft until 2023, but he's another guy that people are saying, this guy may be the next Connor McDavid. And lo and behold, his name is Connor. So there you go. But But, you know, what I like is that he tore the WHL up, and that's more of a physical league. That's more for bruisers and defensemen. But he tore that league up like nobody's ever seen before. So he's also playing on Canada. Another guy, the second part of that three-headed monster for that 2022 draft is Brad Lambert, will be playing for Finland. We already got to see Brad Lambert in World Juniors this year, but he's going to play for Finland anyway. Notable absence is actually Matthew Savoy, who is not going to play for Team Canada. My reasoning being is I think he did play in the USHL this year for the Dubuque Fighting Saints. I just think that because he was playing down there and because I think he's still playing for them as we speak, they didn't want to pull him out and quarantine him. I think that's the only reason why he's not there. I don't think it has anything to do with his skill. I don't think it has anything to do with the coach's bias or politics. I just think he's not there simply because he chose to come down to the U.S. this year to play. But we'll definitely be seeing him in the CHL next year, provided everything in Canada gets back to him.
All sounds really good to me. And Shane Wright is being projected as the number one overall pick in next year's NHL draft. And he is being hyped as one of the best prospects we have seen since the likes of Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews. He is being heavily hyped as one of the consensus number one overall picks. Brad Lambert seems like he is the consensus number two or three overall pick, along with Matthew Savoy, who is a notable absence in this upcoming tournament. But I got to agree, Connor Bedard has really emerged as a legitimate prospect this year and has really torn up this league like we haven't seen before. He is really turning some heads, and I hope he continues his production. And maybe the LIHF under 18 tournament is where he's going to get that. Maybe that's where we see him break out even further and he cements his name as a name to watch in 2023. But moving right along to our last bit of news for the day, there are potential bubble plans right now for Canadian teams, for specifically the Canadian division for the playoffs, which will also be our segue into that playoff seating. So if you're here for that, don't go away. We're going to that in just a minute or two. But Tom, I want you to lay the groundwork right now for what that bubble plan could be per Elliot Friedman.
Well, this was reported on Saturday night. I read the article. There's about three different things that they want to do. The first thing is act as if everything were normal. If the border is opened up by the time the conference finals and the Stanley Cup finals begin, then we travel as normal. If a team gets into, obviously you'll have a Canadian team playing in the, I don't even want to call it the conference finals because it's not the conference finals this year, it's the semifinals. The Stanley Cup semifinals, you know, if the borders open, you travel back and forth as so. Obviously, there'll be quarantine regulations and whatnot. But we sit there and we hope that by then things will be a little bit back to normal. The second idea put forth was that the team that comes out of the North Division, the Canadian Division, however you want to call it, will pick a U.S. city to call home. So they'll basically be playing their games in an empty arena or, I guess, with limited attendance in a U.S. city, kind of like they're doing in baseball and basketball with the Toronto Blue Jays and the Raptors. And that'll be their home city for the semifinal. And if they make it to the Stanley Cup final, that'll be their home city. A third idea was hinted at bringing all four teams into the U.S. and just having them play in one bubble city. I think that would be the most extreme idea, whereas they would stay in one bubble, they would play their semifinal, division final, and then their home games for the semifinal, potentially Stanley Cup final there. Personally, I want the first one to happen. I want the border to be back open. I want these teams to be playing on home soil. If the Toronto Maple Leafs end a 54-year curse this year, even though they might not be playing in front of any fans at their home arena, still call it the ACC, but it's obviously not that anymore. At least I'm not calling Maple Leaf Gardens, right? You know, it would still be nice to see them, if it's a home game, win their cup on home ice. With the second potential situation, I like it a little bit. It's depending on where you're going to put the team. If Vancouver, say, makes the playoffs and goes on a run there, and what the league is doing in Seattle, it would be interesting to see them put Vancouver, say, maybe in Portland, Oregon for the time being, and seeing if the fans will turn out there and watch, and just seeing, you know, what kind of interest it'll delve up. And maybe in a few years, like I've hinted at, a team that's not doing so well, maybe relocate it to Portland if things go well in Seattle, which I'm sure they were. The bubble city in the U.S., I don't like it at all. I think that these teams, even if they're not going to play in front of any fans, should still be playing in Canada. I think it just is good for the community and for their fans in general. So that third one, I hope, never sees the light of day.
Yeah, I agree. I think the bubble idea in the U.S. is not necessarily the best of ideas, especially if these Canadian teams have been doing all that they can to quarantine in Canada. I think it's only right that they do hold a bubble system of some form in Canada until the semifinal round.
Well, they wouldn't have to do that. They'd still be playing in their home. If they stay in Canada, they're going to play in their home, in their respective cities and their respective home arenas.
And that's true. And that would honestly be, that's probably honestly to me, in my opinion, which is a dirty O word, I think that's probably the better option right now. And I don't see any reason why they can't do that, especially in the divisional round. But we'll have to see as time goes on. Now, speaking about the divisional rounds, it's time for us to make some predictions of the playoff seeding. And probably next week, what we're going to do is predict the outcomes of those matchups and maybe even predict going further into the playoffs, especially since we only got a couple more games left of this regular season until the playoffs do officially begin. Each team besides Vancouver has roughly 8 to 9 games left of the regular season. So regular season is already winding down, and it's kind of crazy to think because it felt like the season just started yesterday. So it's time to talk about some playoff predictions, some playoff seeding predictions. Tom, I would like you to lay the groundwork right now for those of us listeners that might not be as familiar with the new format of this playoff. What does the first round look like?
Okay, well, basically the first round is going to be just in divisions. It'll be the top four teams in each division making the playoffs. You'll have your one seed play your four seed, your two seed play your three seed. The two winners of that will move on to the division final. The four division winners will be reseeded in a semifinal series for the Stanley Cup, and then your two winners out of that will be playing for the Stanley Cup, so there'll be no Eastern or Western Conference final this year. There's a potential that you could see a Toronto Maple Leaf Boston Bruins Stanley Cup final, which I think would be pretty cool. There's a potential you could see, you know, there's a lot of potential for a lot of different things out there, but I like it this year. I wish that this is what they did 10 years ago when they realigned the divisions and they had moved Atlanta to Winnipeg, rather. I was hoping that that's what they were going to do. They were going to scrap the East and the West and just do four divisions. And then your four playoff winners play for a semifinal, your two winners play for the cup. And maybe this will continue on in the next year, even if they go back to the regular divisions, like the Metropolitan, the Atlantic, the Central, and the Pacific. I'm hoping that they do scrap the East and the West next year, and they at least keep it like that for the playoffs. We shall see, but I'll tell you what, I like this a lot better. I really do. Because how many years would you see a conference final, and you're sitting there going, you know something? This is really a Stanley Cup final I'm watching. And a lot of people said it about 2014. Sorry, Rangers. I mean, that was a great run. But, I mean, there's still a lot of people saying the real Stanley Cup final in 14 was that Chicago-LA series.
Absolutely. 100%. And who knows? Maybe going into next season, we could see an adaptation of what we see right now. I mean, I'm a teacher, and I know this might trigger other teacher listeners, but you could see maybe a hybrid model of the – all right, I'll see my way out. I'm sorry. But anyway We are going to dive into some predictions right now. We're going to go from east to west to Canada, and that's the way I'm going to work this for right now. So we're starting with the Eastern Division first, which seems a little bit more open than we had maybe previously thought. So, Tom, I'm going to start with your predictions first. What's your seeding in the East?
You know something? Last year around this time, we were all in quarantine for COVID, and on ESPN, and I know we've been talking about them a lot, they had that documentary about the 90s Chicago Bulls called The Last Dance. And I think the overall feeling right now around the Pittsburgh Penguins is that this might be their last real chance at taking the Stanley Cup and at, you know, making some noise in the playoffs. You know, and I complimented the Penguins last week, and I'm going to compliment them again this week. You know, they finally got that depth player, that veteran back in Jeff Carter. I watched him against the Bruins yesterday. To tell you the truth, I really think Pittsburgh is going to take number one in this division. I do. Number two, I think it's open for discussion, but I do think it's going to be D.C. I do think it's going to be the Capitals. You know, they're right there. I mean, this may be the last time you see a true Penguins-Capitals rivalry before both teams start going into decline or start having to rebuild those teams. Number three right now, I'd still go with the Islanders. You know, they're just an all-around, they're a good team. They don't have one star to depend on. They're maybe not the most offensive team, but they definitely can play D. They definitely play defensive style. And, you know, as a Ranger fan, I like what they're doing. I really do. But just with the way COVID stopped the Bruins and it has them, you know, with games at hand on the Rangers, I hate to say it, I do think Boston is still going to take that fourth seed. I'm a diehard Ranger fan. I really want to see them do it. It would be awesome to go into Boston that last weekend of the season and take their playoffs away and laugh at them for saying, look at you. You went out and got Taylor Hall. You couldn't even make the freaking playoffs. But, yeah, I think I'm going with those four. You know, I know a lot of people like DC to finish in first, Islanders to finish in first, but there's just something about the Penguins that I've been watching. There's just this, I think there's this overall feeling in them saying, you know what, man, this might be our real last shot to do something. So say what you will with it. Let me know what you think, Gary.
Definitely. And honestly, not a bad prediction at all. My prediction is only slightly different. And first, I got to preface this with saying is this is a pretty wide open division for teams not named the Devils or the Sabres. So, you know, it's rough seasons for both of those teams. We'll get to the Devils later on. But Pittsburgh right now is currently the number one seed. I don't know if they'll have that for much longer. I think I agree with you wholeheartedly, Tom. I think this is the last year that Pittsburgh has to really make some noise in this playoffs, and they've made some really good moves at the trade deadline to get themselves there. But you want to know who also made a decent deal that might come back to haunt them later, but a decent deal as it looks like right now? Washington Capitals. And I actually have the Washington Capitals as my number one seed, because when you have the likes of Ovechkin, Backstrom, Mantha, Carlson, Oshie, and Kuznetsov leading the charge with a shockingly good Vitek Vanacek in net and a grizzled veteran like Zdeno Chara guiding Washington through those playoff waters, I feel confident that Washington could actually go pretty far this year, and this could actually be one of Washington's last years to really go far before they need to blow it up just like Pittsburgh. Now, the reason why I say Pittsburgh is not the number one and why I have them as my number two seed is because there's no bones about it. They've got a great squad. Sidney Crosby is playing fantastically. Jacob Gensel is also playing very, very well. A really good squad all around, but what is going to kill them is their inconsistency. I can't put my full faith in a team that one night beats up the Boston Bruins and then the next night barely squeaks by against the New Jersey Devils. I can't put my full faith behind that. Next on my list here, number three, New York Islanders. They made some insurance moves with Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac. I feel like this is a no-brainer to make the playoffs. I mean, they are a set it and forget it. They're going to make the playoffs. It's just going to figure out where they're going to end up. And I think the consensus is right now at number three. Now, number four is a little bit more wide open. And the frustrating part of why it's wide open, Philadelphia is still hanging around. But my God, they have had probably the most disappointing season for a team that made the playoffs last year. What a step back for Carter Hart and the rest of this Philadelphia squad that many felt were the Stanley Cup favorites coming into this year, including myself. So it makes myself look really, really dumb in this situation for calling them as a Stanley Cup favorite. It's a fall from grace for them. They're going to need to reassess what they're going to do after this season. Maybe some changes behind the bench are needed, but who knows? So really, this is a battle and fight between the Boston Bruins and the New York Rangers. Let's get into this. So Boston has the glitz and the glamour. They've got guys like Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, David Krejci, Taylor Hall, recently acquired from the Buffalo Sabres, Patrice Bergeron, their, you know, oh, captain, my captain, Charlie McAvoy, and Craig Smith, just to name a few. But the Rangers have been on fire for the past 2 weeks. With the reemergence of Mika Zibanejad, or as I'll call it, Mika 2, the revenge, this New York team has found consistent play from the likes of Alexi Lafreniere, Pavel Buchnevich, Artemi Panarin, Chris Kreider, and Igor Shesterkin at the exact right moment that they
need. Don't forget Kako. He's been having himself a hell of a game, too. So
now I'll forget him. But I'm kidding. Yes, Kako has been consistent as well. And what more can I say about the best player currently on the New York Rangers, Adam Fox? In my opinion, he's your Norris Trophy winner this year. There's no argument for me. Maybe you make an argument for Victor Hedman, but to me, it's Adam Fox. He has been one of the biggest reasons why the New York Rangers are even in this position right now, especially with the way he has set up so many beautiful goals this season. He reminds me of a young Brian Leetch in many, many ways, and I think this is a good thing for years to come for the New York Rangers. But only one of these teams can take the last spot in the East. It's a tough race, but I think ultimately Boston will come out on top. I think they have one more year with this squad to show that they can win before they have to contemplate a fire sale. And this is nothing for a Rangers fan to hang their heads on. This is not a moment for Rangers fans to kick their hat into the dust and say, well, Rangers again, they have only just begun, and there are much brighter days ahead for the New York Rangers. Nothing to hang your heads on. So my final East standings seeding goes as follows: Washington, Pittsburgh, Islanders, Boston, in that order. And you get a Washington-Boston matchup, Zdeno Chara versus his former team. That's a great matchup right there, and I think a lot of people would tune in to watch that. Moving on over now to the Central Division, and things aren't as wide open here, but we've got some interesting matchups here. Tom, we'll start with your prediction here.
Well, you got a little bit of a logjam at the top where it just seems like every day you got somebody else in first place, but you know what? Carolina, I'm going to be hating them next year. I think them and the Rangers, it's good. That's going to be your must-see playoff hockey TV over the next few years. But to tell you the truth, man, I'm looking at the standings right now, and they're in first place with two games in hand on Florida and a game in hand on the Bolts. And I do think Carolina's going to walk out of this division just because Florida and Tampa just seem to be canceling each other out every time they play. It seems to be every time the Bolts and the Panthers see each other, they seem to just, it seems to be a blowout for one team or a blowout for the other. And Carolina just seems to be taking care of business on their own end. Aho, Teravainen, Teravainen, who still should be playing in Chicago, but we don't got to talk about that right now. But yeah, I'm going with Carolina as number one. I really think with the second and the third, it could be anybody's game in Florida and the Bolts. You know, I think this will come down to the last day of the season, but I mean, it doesn't really matter who finishes in second or third. They're going to see each other. One team's going to have home ice, the other's not. But, you know, for the first time ever, we're going to have a battle of the Sunshine State. And, you know, those games I've watched this year have been pretty good, and, you know, I would love to watch that as a playoff series. The fourth seed, that's a little tougher to figure out. Chicago's still in, but barely. I just don't see them making it this year. Then you have Nashville and Dallas. Nashville, who early in the year everyone thought was going to blow the team up, they got two games in hand on Dallas right now. But like I said, if Dallas were to win those two games in hand, they actually would leapfrog them and go 2 points ahead. 2 points ahead. Dallas kind of been playing with a cup hangover all year, but at the same time, you never know. Speaking of the Chicago Blackhawks, if anybody remembers, way back in 2011, 10 years ago, they were defending champions, but were out of the playoffs most of the season. Obviously, Dallas is defending Western Conference champions, which doesn't mean anything this year because the Western Conference doesn't exist. But you want to know something? I could see Dallas really, really kicking it into gear those last few games of the season and surprise everybody and jumping into that last season. And, you know, maybe they beat Carolina, maybe they don't. But, you know, there you go. You have a team with some playoff experience hopping in there. So, you know something? I'm giving Dallas the number four seed for the Central Division. I am. I'm gonna make that prediction.
Not a bad prediction. My prediction is slightly different, but we'll get to why in a little bit. I think it's safe to say that Carolina, Florida, and Tampa Bay are making the playoffs. I mean, that's a type of, like, set it and forget it type of bet. Like, you don't even have to think. It's just like, oh yeah, those three teams are going to make the playoffs. It's going to depend on where they seed, but I'll get into why I seed, you know, the teams where I do later on. The fourth seed is where it gets the most interesting. So we have spent the majority of this season, Tom and I meaning, we've spent the majority of this year dumping on Nashville and dunking on them the entire season. Yet they've somehow turned this season around without Philip Forsberg, their best forward. I don't know how. I honestly don't know how. They don't deserve to have turned their season around, but they have. And I think it's more so because of the shortcomings of Dallas and Chicago. That being said, Dallas and Chicago are not too far behind. Dallas is 2 points back, as Tom mentioned before. Chicago is only 5 points back. So a couple wins here and there, it gets Chicago back where they need to be. My gut wants to say Dallas, like Tom did, but I honestly can't say that confidently because they've had quite the cup hangover, as Tom was alluding to a little bit earlier. Now let's get into why they've had that hangover. They've been missing core pieces like Tyler Seguin, Alexander Radulov, and Ben Bishop, and they've been missing the three of them badly, 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 badly. As for Chicago, I just can't see them catching up without the likes of Jonathan Toews in their lineup. This is a team that is missing Jonathan Toews' leadership very much so. If they somehow catch up and get that number four seed, there's no argument. Give Patrick Kane the Hart Memorial Trophy tomorrow because he has put this team on his back. He's going to basically paint the picture for you. He's going to need back surgery after this season for carrying them as far as they have gone. They have not deserved to be anywhere close to playoff contention. And this is all on the backs of Patrick Kane. But only one team can get that final spot. I think it's Nashville, unfortunately. I think Nashville is going to get that spot. It's going to lead them into a false sense of security, and it's only going to be bad for them next year, to be honest. I think they're going to feel a little bit too confident, just like the Devils were a couple years ago. Go and get some pieces maybe to try to get to the playoffs again and get that playoff, you know, just get that playoff hit, get that taste, and it's not going to be worth it. They're going to need to blow things up. And I think that's the most unfortunate thing for Nashville, because not too long ago, this Nashville team was something special. But my final predictions for the seeding of the Central Division, I've got Carolina number one, Florida number two, Tampa Bay number three, and Nashville number four. I believe Florida has what it takes to be the number one seed, but I left them at number two because, I'll be honest, I so badly want that Tampa Bay and Florida matchup. Gimme, 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 gimme. Feed me more of that. I want to see that in the first round of the playoffs so, so badly. That's going to be the matchup to watch in the first round, is going to be Florida and Tampa Bay if they meet each other in the first round. But we got to play these last remaining games to see what actually happens. Going on forward, we've got the Western Division, which is a lot easier to predict. This one's going to be a short one. So, Tom, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, obviously you have Vegas and Colorado at the top, and you have Minnesota right in there just because they had a monster month a few weeks back in February and March. Afterwards, it does get a little interesting. Right now you got Arizona holding down that fourth spot, but not by much. I think it's going to come down to between Arizona and St. Louis. Arizona right now has the three games in hand. San Jose is still kind of there, but I don't think they're going to make it. I think they're there, but they won't be there this time next week. I want to say St. Louis won't make it, but just the way they played Colorado, I watched the game Saturday afternoon, and just the desperation they played in, and with them having played three games less than Arizona, to tell you the truth, I do think it's St. Louis that's going to take that fourth spot. Despite Minnesota being right on Colorado there, I think it's only because Colorado played two less games. I think it's going to come down to Vegas and Colorado fighting for that number one spot. And it is going to be interesting in determining who finishes number one. But my gut here is going to go with the veterans over in Vegas. I do think Vegas is going to take that division, but it's not going to be by much. I'll tell you that right now. It's not going to be by much. So I'm going with Vegas finishing in first, Colorado in second, Minnesota in third, and St. Louis rounding up in the fourth spot.
Good prediction. Well, to me, the top three is pretty easy. Vegas, Colorado, and Minnesota, just simply because they've already made the playoffs. Like, you go and look at the playoff standings, they have already statistically made the playoffs. They are for sure in the playoffs. The last spot, not so easy. As of right now, Arizona has the fourth seed, but St. Louis is right on their tails, just 1 point back from Arizona. That is a tight race. Plus, San Jose is not out of it yet. If they get hot, they could also squeeze in. But I also feel like San Jose is missing a few pieces right now to really get them into that spot. I feel like they're just 1 year off, and I think they still need some more pieces to really have been a legitimate threat against Arizona and St. Louis. Believe it or not, the reason why I'm wearing this jersey today is not for a negative reason. I actually think Arizona has what it takes to actually make the playoffs, and I didn't think I would say that coming into this season. But surprisingly, look, St. Louis plays with a lot of desperation, but the biggest X factor on that team right now is Mike Hoffman. If Mike Hoffman does not play well, this is a team that's not going to make it. It falls on his shoulders. He needs to perform. He needs to show why St. Louis signed him. This was a prove it type of deal. And so far, he's not proven it down the stretch at all. He has not proved that whatsoever. He has been inconsistent all season. And I think that is going to be the ultimate, you know, decisive reason why St. Louis won't make it. Not to say that Arizona is a great team coming into this playoff, but who knows? They could also steal a couple games here and there. They've got Darcy Kemper in net, who's done relatively well. You've also had other players that have been succeeding as well. Nick Schmaltz to highlight there, as well as Clayton Keller. But that is why I think Arizona will inevitably make it in. So my final standings are as follows, and this might be a little bit surprising. And it does not indicate who I think wins these matchups either. I'm just saying what the final seedings are, and then we'll debate this next week. I say Vegas number one, Minnesota number two. I have never lost faith in Minnesota, wow. though many have. Many have doubted Minnesota. I don't doubt Kirill the Thrill, and Kevin Fiala is getting hot exactly when he needs to. Just saying. Colorado number three and Arizona number four. And like I said, that's not necessarily indicative on what I think is going to happen when we get to round one of the playoffs. That you'll have to tune in for next week when we go over our predictions for that. But rounding out this predictions segment for our seeding, we have the Canadian division, which let's travel up north and try to figure out what's going on here. Tom, what is your prediction for the Canadian division?
Well, like you have your love affair with Minnesota over there. Mine with the Toronto Maple Leafs kind of just nails this down. I think they're finishing in first place. I just don't see anybody catching them. They're playing good hockey. They played very well against Winnipeg on Saturday night. I caught that Hockey Night in Canada game. Great game against Winnipeg. For your second and third seed, you can flip-flop Winnipeg and Edmonton. Now, here's what I'll say about it. I do think Edmonton's going to take the two seed. Just because they play well, they're a good regular season team, and I think at the end of the day, Edmonton will overtake Winnipeg. So I think I'm going with Edmonton is number two there, and Winnipeg is number three. But things may be different when it comes down to a different season in the NHL. But you know, you guys will just have to wait for that show when we talk about that. Now, number four, Vancouver has been playing very inspired hockey since coming out of the COVID break. I really like how they're playing. But like I said, Vancouver this year got in their own way even before that COVID outbreak. And as much as I would love to see them get in and love to see them maybe even make a run and then that whole Portland, Oregon idea I had before come to fruition, I just don't think it's to be. I think Montreal will round that out, and you will have for the first time since I believe, and let me just double check here, but I believe 1979, you will have a Toronto Maple Leaf Montreal Canadian playoffs here. And maybe it'll be a little more meaningful than the ones in the 70s because, as we know, in the 70s, the Habs were a juggernaut and the Leafs were pretenders owned by one of the most terrible people and terrible owners in sports history, Harold Ballard, who just didn't care and said, why should I have to spend any money when I can get anybody to show up and watch this team and I can make money off of concessions and ticket sales and merchandise? So why should I really buy any players or even care? So hopefully this time, this playoff series is a little more meaningful than the ones they played in the 70s. But it would just be something nice to see.
I 110% agree there, and I think our predictions are actually going to line up pretty similarly here. It's still relatively wide open, and it's relatively wide open only simply because Vancouver has to make up 7 games in their division to catch up to everybody's games played total. So statistically, Vancouver's not out of it yet, but they're also kind of out of it. I'll get to that in a second. But I think it's relatively safe to say that Toronto keeps the number one seed. I don't see anybody usurping them whatsoever for that number one seed. From there, I think Edmonton takes the number two seed. And the only reason why I see Edmonton taking the number two seed is because Winnipeg is a little banged up at the moment, and not even insignificantly. So you have Adam Lowry, who is still in concussion protocol as of yesterday. And just today, it was announced that Nikolaj Ehlers is going to be out for the remainder of the regular season. And that's nothing to scoff at the moment, because he currently has the second most points on the Winnipeg Jets with 46 points. He has 21 goals, 25 assists, 46 points in 47 games, nearly a point a game for Winnipeg this year. So that's a huge blow to Winnipeg down the stretch. They're really going to miss him. Other than that, they've also been missing Brian Little this year. That's, I mean, way more significant in general. He's been missing for a year now. And as of recently, they've been missing Nathan Beaulieu, who's been more of a stay-at-home defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. That's my only reason why I say the Jets take the number three seed and not the number two seed. That being said, Winnipeg could steal some games in the playoffs from Edmonton and could very well, you know, take that particular series against Edmonton. We'll get into that in our prediction the week after that. After that, as hard as Vancouver will try, I think they're going to come up short to the Montreal Canadiens, who I honestly feel will take the number four seed. Vancouver was such a feel-good story this year, and then COVID happened, and just like for other teams that entered COVID protocol, it was an uphill climb from there for them, and I think it's ultimately going to be too much for them to handle, and you know, just rest up and get ready for next year, and Vancouver is going to be a team to reckon with next year. This is not goodbye for Vancouver whatsoever. Another team that is close to the Montreal Canadiens at the moment is the Calgary Flames, but honestly, I just don't see Calgary catching Montreal. There's definitely some really good pieces on Calgary. I think they've had some really good consistent play, but Montreal, I feel like as streaky as they've been, I think they are going to be a team that enters and sneaks into that number four seed, especially, you know, given that they could get a little bit of, you know, a youthful rejuvenation of this team, especially since tonight they will have the debut of their first round pick from last year, Cole Caufield. So he is making his NHL debut tonight. We'll see if he ends up factoring on this NHL squad in the last remaining games to really make that playoff push happen. Plus, Tyler Toffoli is still playing out of his mind. He has 24 goals this season, and he's only going to continue that in the last remaining games.
Right. So, he becomes a Rocket Richard winner in NHL 20. So,
just nuts in that regard.
Yeah. But
with that, my seeding goes as this: Toronto number one, Edmonton number two, Winnipeg number three, and Montreal number four, especially because like seeing a Toronto versus Montreal matchup in the first round, that would just be so cool. That would be too cool for school. Another one of those matchups that you need to watch in the first round of the playoffs. And we'll certainly break that all down next week when we get a much clearer picture of what the playoffs are going to look like. So we might take what our predictions are and predict that, or we might have a clearer picture of who is making the playoffs next week, and we'll be predicting that next week. So you're going to need to tune in next week for that, and to also see if I definitively learn the English language, which is going to be great. So that was quite a bit to talk about, but as per usual, it's time to enter our fans' corners real quick. I also had a little bit of a false start on the offense there because I popped up Tom's Rangers realm a little bit too quickly. So as you guys know, I'm a diehard Devils fan, quite to my detriment at the moment. And Tom is a diehard Rangers fan, not quite to his detriment at the moment, but at the same time, it's still to his detriment. He's a Rangers fan. Let's be real. But it's time to enter Tom's Rangers realm. So Tom, time for you to gloat about how well the Rangers are doing right now, much to my tears. And away you go. Tell us about the Rangers this week.
I'm not going to gloat to start, to tell you the truth. We recorded on Tuesday of last week, like we have to do every now and then because life gets in the way, unfortunately. And last Tuesday, they played one of the worst games they played all season. We're blown out by the Islanders. We're beat to every loose puck. We pretty much just ran off the ice. We lost Jacob Trouba to a concussion, and we have some of my fellow fans claiming they need an enforcer. They need to be physical. They need to throw the body around. I'm actually going to delve into that later on because it's a general thought of mine that I had, and it's something that I argue with people about on a daily basis. But the game against the Islanders, I don't care about the toughness. I don't care about any of it. They just did not play well. Plain and simple, they did not play well. Thursday night, they played against the Flyers, and they also didn't play very well. They were hitting posts left and right. They should have been up 3-0 after that first period, and they just didn't. And they let James Van Riemsdyk, Middletown, New Jersey native, not too far away from where I grew up, have his night at the Garden. You know, it was a dire Ranger fan growing up. Favorite player was Adam Graves, potted two goals. And they, again, didn't play well. Did they play as bad as they did against the Islanders? No. But they still didn't play good. They should have won that game Thursday. They straight out didn't do it. So then we arrive at Friday against the Flyers. In that game, they woke up and played a little bit of hockey. The hockey, you know, that we expected sort of out of the Rangers this year. We saw Buchnevich with a goal. We saw Hedel with a nice breakaway goal. We saw Kreider with a power play goal. He's been waking up a little bit. But what I loved and my favorite part of the game was a two-point night from Alexis Lafreniere. And the goal he scored against the Flyers on Friday night was the quintessential Alexis Lafreniere goal. Come down on a tight corner, stuff it short side. Nobody even knew it was in the net. This is the Lafreniere we were advertised about. And this is the Lafreniere that I've been telling everybody about. Send him down. He's a boss. Worst guy. No. This is why Alexis Lafreniere is a special player. And this is somebody who we are going to be very fortunate to be watching over the next 10 to 15 years here in New York if he keeps this up. He's starting to come into his own, and I love it. I love every part of it. And that leads us into last night against Buffalo. That first goal with Banachad comes down with the puck, has everyone close in on him, has eyes, head on a swivel, eyes in the back of his head, feeds Banachad, Banachad comes in and pots that first goal. Then he potted another one and another one. And then we thought that that Picacco goal was actually a Lafreniere goal, but it was a Kako goal. And let me just go in a Capo Kako too, man. Hell of a game last night. Potted that one-timer that a lot of people said earlier in the season and last season, you would have tried to make 14 different moves, then try to stuff it that way. Last night, blasted by. Last night on the power play, gets into a dirty area, picks up that rebound, blasts it in the net. Capo Kako coming into his own. Alexi Lafreniere coming into his own. Mika Zibanejad showing the player that he can be. Artemi Panarin. He's Artemi Panarin. Do I need to say any more? Should I say any more? I don't think I have to. Adam Fox, as Brian mentioned, I'm not going to plagiarize Brian, but Adam Fox, front runner for Norris right now, man. I would love if this team could make the playoffs. And I believe if this team were to draw a team like the Washington Capitals, this would be a team that the Capitals would not want to have to play against. Believe me, this would be a kryptonite for the Capitals, this Ranger team. They make it this year, great. If they don't, like I've said before, it's nothing to worry about. And I want to take you guys back in time a little bit here before I turn it over to Brian. If anybody can remember, back in the 07-08 season, the Chicago Blackhawks with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Patrick Sharp, they didn't have Hossa yet. They still had Duncan Keith and Seabrook, another up-and-coming team, and everyone was saying the same thing. Chicago made a little run at the end of the season. It didn't end in the playoffs, but everybody at the end of that 07-08 season was saying this. This Blackhawk team is going to be a force to be reckoned with over the next few years, and I mean, look what happened. They won 3 Stanley Cups. You know, they were in a few conference finals. They still should be contending now, but that's their ownership's idiotic management there, but still. And I think it's the same feeling around the Rangers right now, whereas if the Rangers don't make it this year, they'll be a contender next year. And by the time 2023 rolls around, the sky is the limit for these guys. And hopefully management can keep them going and, you know, keep adding value into the pipeline for prospects, you know. Fingers crossed. One more thing I want to delve into before Brian goes. Zach Jones made his NHL debut against the Flyers on Thursday night. Got his first point yesterday against the Sabres. So cheers to Zach Jones.
Heck yeah. So we're going to delve from positivity into negativity. Welcome to the Devil's Den. My name is Pain and Shame. It's another rough week for the Devils. Not as rough as the week prior, but still a rough week. The Devils have now dropped 10 of their last 10 games, which, if you're keeping track at home, they're 0-10, and they're on a 10-game losing streak. Yay! Maybe for some fans, that's yay. Tank, tank, tank. But anyway, it's a sobering feeling. There was hope coming into the season, but COVID really hurt this team. I've said it once, and I'll say it again. I really wonder where this team would be if they did not have their COVID break. I honestly think that this was a team that played really, really well at the beginning of the season. It's unfortunate where they've ended up, and it's of no fault to the coaching. It's of no fault to the players. They're still really green. They're still really young, and they're still growing. But there have been some bright spots this week. So a couple players I want to highlight here. Jack Hughes. I feel he's primed to really break out next year or the year after. Mark my words, he's going to be a superstar in this league. You watch him with the puck, he is mesmerizing. He is so good at puck possession, especially for a guy his size. He's going to be a superstar, mark my words. And there's going to come a time where we're not talking as much about Quinn Hughes, and we're going to be talking more about Jack Hughes. And when Luke Hughes comes into the league in this upcoming year, we'll still be talking about Jack Hughes rather than Luke Hughes or Quinn Hughes. Still going to be an interesting conversation to have later on, but that's for later on. Another bright spot this week was Will Butcher, 5 assists this week, and he played a lot better as of late. I'll be curious to see what his fate is for the upcoming season. If he ends up on the Devils roster in some capacity, if he's viewed as trade value, as trade bait, it'll just be interesting to see. I really have liked his play as of late. He reminds me of his rookie season, which was fantastic. So if he can keep doing that and growing, that would be awesome. Miles Wood. I love Miles Wood. I have always been a big Miles Wood fan, and I'm so glad that he is not the scapegoat of the team anymore. And if you know, you know. But he also scored his team-leading 16th goal of the year this week. And I truly hope that he's protected in this year's expansion draft. I really hope that he is not the player that is taken by Seattle later on in June. Lastly, the other person I wanted to mention this week, Igor Sharangovich. He's been a consistent bright spot on this team. He's been one of the league's best rookies. And I hope he's not exposed to the expansion draft. There's a little bit of debate on whether he can be exposed or not. It's a little bit of a weird gray area. So I'll be curious to see what happens there. If he ends up accidentally getting exposed to the, not accidentally, but if he's a conscious decision to get exposed to the expansion draft, I think Seattle would be dumb not to take him. He has been fantastic. A quick shout out this week on a really, really good effort on last Tuesday's game. The Devils were down 6-1 after the second period, and I actually turned the game off. This is horrible of me to say, but I'll be open and honest. I turned that game off. I really didn't know why I was watching. I felt so desensitized by how the Devils were performing that I was just like, you know what? I'd rather watch the Yankees right now. And I regret that I did, because they come out in the third period and they only lose 7-6. They scored 5 goals in the third period. That's a great effort. Better days are ahead. But I'll be honest, if we're losing right now, I want that top 3 pick in this upcoming draft. Give me one of either Luke Hughes, Owen Powers, or Matthew Beniers. Give me one of those 3 guys. That would really help speed up this rebuild. Really, really speed it up. And if they end up outside of the top 3, give me William Eklund. He's played with Alexander Holtz, and he'd be a fantastic option as another one of those sniper players and finishers like the Devils so desperately need right now. But my sadness is over for now. It's time to talk some general NHL, US hockey and weekly thoughts of ours, which I'll go first with this one. Person I want to highlight real quick. I highlighted him last week. Spencer Knight, he made his NHL debut, as I mentioned last week. 33 out of 34 possible saves made last week. So he got his first win last week. He has such a bright future ahead. But I'm going to go on the other end of the spectrum and go from a young goalie to an actually older goaltender. And I wanted to highlight Jonathan Bernier from the Detroit Red Wings. Shout out to Bex. We need to have you on soon. Cheers to you, Bex. But through 2 periods on Saturday against Dallas, he stopped 42 of 42 shots. Meanwhile, Detroit only shot the puck 6 times in 2 periods. 3 in the first, 3 in the second. That's not really helping your goaltender. But he stood on his head. He lost in overtime, but he still made 50 out of 52 saves. He stood on his head at 32 years old. He still can play. He looks really, really good as of late. And I think he's priming himself for a potential pay raise in free agency, and not for nothing. He is one of those goaltenders that I'm kind of hoping that the Devils consider signing as a 1B option for Mackenzie Blackwood. That's just me, though. Tom, what's your highlight from this past week?
I don't really have a highlight as opposed to a thought. It was something that really bothered me after the Ranger-Islander game on Tuesday night when the Rangers were basically went out of building 6-1. And it wasn't so much the Rangers didn't play. The Rangers just didn't play well, which I agreed on with everybody. But it's these people claiming that, oh, they need an enforcer. They need a tough guy. They need to go out there and, somebody who will just go out there and get in fights. The enforcer, as we know it, no longer exists in this league. Just doesn't. A guy who can't skate, who's just there getting fights, those days are over. They've been over for a while, and John Tortorella did that with this team in 2012, and it didn't do anything. Everyone talks about, oh, we need to be tough. That's the only way you win the Stanley Cup is by toughness and by fighting. Since the Flyers won in 75, give me one team who's won a cup by gooning their way to a Stanley Cup. I mean, maybe Anaheim in 07, but Anaheim kind of had 2 top caliber defensemen on their team, and they kind of played a one-line team in Ottawa in the finals. So, okay. Maybe Boston in 2011, but I think it was more Boston. Boston ran 4 lines against Vancouver where AB wouldn't really play his 4th line and would just keep putting the Sedins out there. Boston's their six defensemen they had on the ice were eons better than Vancouver's defensemen. So maybe Boston was tougher, but I don't think Boston won through intimidation. I just think Boston won because they had better depth and better defense, and arguably maybe a better goalie because Luongo was terrible those finals. So, everyone talks about you got to be big, you got to be tough, but, case in point, look at the 97 Stanley Cup finals. Everyone was crowning the Flyers kings after they beat the Rangers that year. Oh, Eric Lindros and, they had the Legion of Doom line and Trent Clatt and John Drewson. This is a big, tough team. This is a return of tough hockey. These Flyers are going to run the Red Wings out of the building. Yeah, it didn't happen. The Red Wings swept the Flyers in four straight. You want to know why the Red Wings swept the Flyers in four straight? Because they won with A, they won with depth. They had four lines who could do anything. Could score, could grind, could check, could hit a little bit, but didn't really need to because they kept the puck away from them. Number two, they won with speed. Everyone going into those finals said, they're going to play Lindros against Konstantinov because it's a tough guy against a tough guy. Yeah, that didn't happen. They played Lidstrom against Lindros. You want to know why? Because Lidstrom had the speed and the skill, and Scotty Bowman's reasoning was, if Lidstrom has the puck the whole time, Lindros can't have the puck, so he can't be effective. So you know what wins Stanley Cups? Depth, speed, and just being better at every position. So I'm sick of this enforcer that, oh, we need tough hockey. We need guys to stir it up. Doesn't work. It hasn't worked, and it's not going to work ever again. So I'm sorry. Hate me for it. Judge me on it. Fight me on it, what you will. The enforcer, as we know it, is dead, and it's never coming back.
I agree. And, you know, not for nothing, they're also calling Toronto a bit of a dirty team right now and a bit of a goon team. So I don't know. I don't know if I fully buy into that either. But Tampa Bay also proved last year that you win with depth and depth alone. Like having a line, like a third line of Yanni Gourde, Blake Coleman, and Barclay Goodrow is sometimes all you need. That's sometimes all you need. It's not about what your top line does. It's about what your bottom six does. It's what helped for teams for years and years. The New Jersey Devils in 2012. Yeah, Ilya Kovalchuk put that team on their back, but I'll still never forget that bottom line of Steven Gionta, Ryan Carter, and, you know, the now exonerated Steven Bernier. And
yeah, who skated circles around Brandon Prust and Mike Rupp because Tortorella thought, and John Mitchell because John Tortorella thought having those guys out there would do something.
This is true. Very, very true. But that segues us into our question of the week. Funny that we were talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs with that, because the question of the week is, what team had the best squad to never win a Stanley Cup? So an example here would be like if I said the 2001 New Jersey Devils, which that is one of the best squads to never win the Stanley Cup. They had an amazing team that year. I do have a different answer, though, but Tom, I'm going to start with you. So who's the best squad to never win a Stanley Cup?
Well, this is a three-parter here, I'll say. As a Ranger fan, two come to mind just selfishly, the 1971 Rangers and the 1992 Rangers, two teams who just needed to win, who, if they would have won one game, would have wound up winning a Stanley Cup. In 71, they had one in Game 6 in triple overtime against the Blackhawks at the Garden. Pete Stemkowski scored the OT goal, and they were up 2-1 at Chicago Stadium in Game 7, but blew the lead. But I've always said, had that team gotten past the Blackhawks, they would have swept Montreal. Those Emil Francis Ranger teams were kryptonite for those 70s Habs teams and just didn't get it done. The 92 team, who, you know, you've heard me delve into here and there. Mike Richter gave up that terrible center ice goal to Ron Francis. I've always said if the Rangers walked out of that game and didn't blow that lead, they would have been up 3-1 on the Pens, and I guarantee they would have beaten the Pens, would have beaten the Bruins, would have beaten the Blackhawks. But I'm not going to talk about either one of those teams. I wasn't born yet in 1971, and I was 4 years old in 19. So I just know these teams from reading about them and from YouTube. A team in my lifetime I had thought about was the 2014 Bruins. I remember watching that team, and I said, there's no way he's going to beat these guys. But at the same time, I feel like it's cheating the answer a little bit because a lot of guys on that team had won the Stanley Cup. So I'm sort of like, yeah, you can use that as an answer, but they had already won it. So I just don't think it works. But there is one team that I am going to go into. And this goes out to all our friends of the Frozen Four podcast in Buffalo, New York. Western New York's favorite. And that would be that 06-07 Buffalo Sabre team. That team was deep. They had Briere, Drury, and Bonick, who were good players. I wouldn't necessarily say stars, but all three of them had career years. Ryan Miller and Nett. Kind of a defense by committee, but they had a nice pairing of Henrik Tillander and Tony Ludman up there. And I remember watching that team during the regular season, and they would just cycle the puck like I had never seen before. They would play keep away. They would literally just bang, 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 pass and shot. And I remember going into the playoffs in 07 saying, I don't know how anybody's going to beat these guys. And after round one, it sort of looked like it too. You know, they had lost one game to the Islanders, but pretty much took care of business with the Islanders. But then they ran into my Rangers, and I think they fought a little less of the Rangers than they should have. And I've always said to this day the Rangers should have won that series in five, but there was a blown call in game two that let the Sabres win the game, and not even that Drury goal in game five, but that there was a I believe a Marty Straka goal that was called offsides that was blatantly not offsides that they called back. But what the Rangers did to that team was they took the wind out of the Sabres' sails, and they lost to the one-line Ottawa Senators in that Eastern Conference Finals. Now, I know I had mentioned the Anaheim Ducks earlier, and I still think to this day, had the Sabres gotten by Ottawa, I think they would have beaten the Ducks. I really do. I think Buffalo would have beaten Anaheim in those finals. And I just want to take it to another degree here. Anaheim had beaten Detroit in the Western Conference Final that year. And that year, the two best teams in the league points-wise were Detroit and Buffalo. They tied on points, but Buffalo had more wins, so they won the President's Trophy. But we were robbed of maybe one of the better Stanley Cup Finals ever that year. A Detroit-Buffalo final that year would have been epic. That would have just been back and forth, skilled hockey, passing, shooting, you know, just good hockey, good positional skilled hockey we would have saw. And we were robbed of it. But, yeah, if there was ever a team in my lifetime that should have won and didn't win, it was that 06-07 Sabres team. Sorry, guys. That was your best shot at winning one. Sorry, my Rangers had to ruin your party a little bit there and knock you out for the series against Ottawa.
This is true. And I didn't even think about the 06-07 Buffalo Sabres team, which, once again, to echo Tom here, shout out to our Frozen Four podcast boys up in Buffalo. You guys are awesome. But, yeah, that 06-07 team, ironically also coached by Lindy Ruff. I say it's ironic because I'm a Devils fan. But that team also sported one of my favorite players to watch in, you know, the mid to late 2000s, and that was Maxim Afanaginov. He was such an exciting player to watch. Such a shame that he was hampered by injuries, and he would have had such an exciting career had he not been injured so, so much. He was an exciting player to watch. But for me, I'm going to be cheating a little bit with what I'm going to say, but I'll say any San Jose Sharks team from 2009 to 2016, seriously, any of those years should have been the year where they could have won the Stanley Cup, but I'll narrow it down a little bit further. I'll say 2009 and 2016. 2009 because Evgeny Nabokov was a goalie possessed that year, Jumbo Joe Thornton amassing over 80 points, and Patrick Marleau scoring 10 game-winning goals that year. And I also say 2016 because that was the year that they finally reached the Stanley Cup, only to be knocked out by who? The Pittsburgh Penguins, of course. But it was just wrong place, wrong time for San Jose. But I also advocate they should have been able to beat Pittsburgh. They should have been able to beat them. That was a beatable squad at that point. San Jose was a deeper team at that point. Any of those years, they should have won the Stanley Cup. And honestly, I will go on record by saying that the San Jose Sharks may possibly be one of the most disappointing teams of the salary cap era. So from 2005 onward up to now, the most disappointing team of this era, in my opinion. Missed opportunity after missed opportunity after missed opportunity. Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton should have two Stanley Cups by now. Tom, do you agree?
Yes and no. That 09 team, I know they had lost to Anaheim. I just don't know if they were going to beat Detroit. I don't. And that 16 team, man, listen, man, as a Ranger fan, and I hate to keep bringing them into this, but Pittsburgh just skated circles around them, man. And Pittsburgh caught fire that year. And I remember when Pittsburgh caught fire in midseason, maybe late February, early March, and I'm just going, I don't think anybody's beating these guys. I know Tampa had them on the ropes, but a little fun fact about that 16 team, about both of those teams, actually, the 16 Penguins and the 16 Sharks, I was out in Pittsburgh. A little before Thanksgiving of 2015, and the Penguins and the Sharks were both kind of out of it at the time. You know, a lot of analysts, a lot of experts were saying it's time to start blowing these teams up. They're done. Start shipping these guys out for, start blowing the corpse, start shipping these guys out for draft picks, start rebuilding. And even at that game, a lot of the Penguins fans had given up hope. And lo and behold, who's playing the Stanley Cup Finals that June? The Penguins and the Sharks. And who wins the Stanley Cup? The Penguins. So I just always thought that, I always found that ironic that I was at the game and fans of both teams were pretty much ready to give up.
Yeah, this is true. But at the same time, I still advocate that San Jose is one of the most disappointing teams since 2005. That's my hill to die on there. But hey, this has been quite a long episode. What are your thoughts? You've probably heard us ramble on long enough. What are your thoughts? We want to be able to chat with you guys down below. Make sure you comment down below with anything that you disagree or even agree with us on. And While you're down there, we'd really appreciate it if you drop a like, and also make sure that you just subscribe down below. But you can also find us at i80sports.com, where, as I mentioned before, the NFL draft is coming up on Thursday, and we're having a huge viewing party for it. It's going to be an awesome party. You got to make sure that you're there to check it out. It's going to be quite a time, and we'll be reacting to every single pick as they come in. So you got to make sure that you're there for it. And of course, as always, make sure you drop a follow on Twitter at @i80_sportsNHL. So that way you can keep up with the conversation on Twitter. But that's going to do it for myself and for Tom. And man, what an episode today. And we're going to be coming at you with more predictions next week for the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's already upon us. It's the best time of the year. Playoff hockey is coming soon. I'm Brian. He's been Tom. As always, this has been i80sports NHL.